वेलकम टू द इक्विटी सहिया पॉडकास्ट विद मोतीलाल ओसवाल एसेट मैनेजमेंट कंपनी। दिस पॉडकास्ट विल डेल्व इनटू द इन्वेस्टमेंट इनसाइट्स एंड फिलोसफीज ऑफ मोतीलाल ओसवाल एसेट मैनेजमेंट कंपनी एंड स्पीक अबाउट द फ्रेमवर्क्स यूज्ड बाय देम टू असेस वेरियस सेक्टर्स फॉर इन्वेस्टमेंट। Folks, welcome to the show. Today is a blockbuster episode. I have not one, but two guests. This is the Investor Playbook. We're taking a lot of questions from listeners. And my guest today, Shrilunkar, Senior VP at Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company, and a bonus guest in the form of Ashish Somaya, CEO at Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company. Ashish, welcome to the show. Shrey, welcome to the show. Thank you both of you all for doing this for us. We have a whole bunch of questions that our listeners, people on social media have asked to answer, you know, because when you invest in equities, it's so much more than just finding the right stock or right mutual fund. There are so many more questions now. Okay, so we're going to go through all these questions. There are about 7-8 of them. Feel free to, you know, to just add in your thoughts the way it goes. We're just going to have a nice free-flowing conversation. Shrey, I'm going to start with the very first one. I think this question, in many ways, it's my own question. I think this is what people should probably give some thought over, instead of just blindly, you know, just starting and saying that I'll buy this stock today or I'll sell that stock tomorrow. I think that the starting point for any investment in equities for the long term, and I'm clearly stating that for the long term, should be built with a framework. That framework includes expectations and a certain philosophy. Now, whether you want to follow the value school of thought or growth or momentum or whatever, but I want to start with this one. So how does one build this investment framework or philosophy in investing in equities?
So one of the most basic rule, which ironically becomes a cardinal rule also, is that you got to invest in what you understand. So I think many times we try to understand too many things, and in the process you start understanding much less of everything. So first thing first, you got to understand yourself and figure out what works for you. Second, you know, there are these labelings that happens of value investing, growth investing, you alluded to, momentum investing, technical investing, technical analysis and based investing. All are relevant forms. But you got to choose a style which you feel comfortable with. And how you typically discover what style suits you is actually till the time you're not in the toughest time or in the darkest hour, you got to be very comfortable with your style. So if I'm a value investor and I'm very, very comfortable in a time when, you know, stock markets are a bad word, that means that is my style. So bottom line is, when you understand what you're doing, your conviction of sustaining drawdowns or sustaining a stock market crash and still sleep in peace, I think that is the very basic litmus test that it should pass. And then you start discovering yourself. And that is why people say that with every bad phase, an investor actually grows in stature. And the result, I mean, the cause is this and the result is that. Essentially, what happens is you got to just figure out. Second is, like, investing itself has evolved in many ways, right? Earlier, investing was all about information arbitrage. Who got the annual report first in his hands and who analyzed that, oh, this company is trading at below the net asset value. That was genuine, you know, Ben Graham value investing zone. At that point in time, there was an information arbitrage which you can easily capitalize on. That was true cigar butt, as they call, or, you know, true value investing. Today, whether your growth or whatever, see, at the end of the day, value is the way you look at it. Each one of us have a very different way of assessing value in a company and measuring it also. So even a growth investor is finding value in growth. Even a value investor is somewhere going to make money out of growth only eventually. And so it really doesn't matter whether you're a value investor or a growth investor. As much as it matters is knowing yourself and knowing what works for you and knowing what will let you still keep a faith in equities or the stocks that you invested in the bad time.
Yeah, Ashish reminds me of that Mike Tyson quote, na? Everyone's got a plan B till they get punched in the face. What do you
Absolutely.
Think?
Absolutely. In fact, I'll take off on what Shrey said, you know, that look at it the other way. The stock doesn't know you're calling it a value stock or a growth stock. You know, you better know what you're actually looking for and, you know, what's your hypothesis before even you step out to do what you thought you will do. And the other important point is, you know, ultimately guys like us are managing, you know, portfolios, mutual funds, and we are ultimately reaching out to end investors. So it's very important for even them to know What's the process behind what we are trying to do? Because, you know, it's not that there is any process which will work through all market cycles. There are certain phases which suit a certain process, and there are certain phases which don't suit a certain process. And ultimately, every client is not going to give all their money to us. So even clients will have style diversity in their portfolios. But what's important is that they should know what we are doing. And we should also be able to tell them that in which circumstances this works out and in what circumstances it doesn't work out.
Okay. So once I've identified my framework, my philosophy, whatever that might be, the next question obviously then is, how do I identify stocks? When in India, I don't know how many sectors are there. If you slice and dice as per large cap, mid cap, that is one more way of looking at stocks. But, you know, what is the starting criteria? What is the way that I should be thinking about it? You know, stocks, individual stocks or sectors or what? This is like, it's this big muddle in my head.
There are obviously, just simplistically put, there are two approaches, a top-down and a bottom-up. I guess there is no need to choose one over the other, because you can really might as well practice both of it very effectively.
Mm.
What simplistically a top-down structure means is where you define what would be those defining changes or defining emergence of trends that you will see happening as we move from a underdeveloped to a developing to a developed status as a country. And you think 10 years, you think 15 years, and you start hypothesizing that, okay. And then you take a lot of learning from the global experiences as well. So if something has happened in China 15, 14, 16 years ago, probably that's what will happen in India, maybe 15, 16 years later.
Yeah.
And then you prepare for it from today. You see what will give you that play. So that is one framework of thinking top down. The second framework of thinking bottom up is that this is a company who has great moats today, and they are so agile that probably their moats can actually expand into other fields, and they can adapt better with the changing time.
Mm.
So maybe, I don't know how this industry is going to evolve after 15 years,
mm.
but I know this management is adapt and agile enough
mm.
to take advantage of the situation.
Okay. Just a note for the folks that if you want to listen to more in-depth analysis of sectors in India, listen to the previous episodes of Equity Sahi. Shreyas talked about a whole lot of sectors, banking, insurance, infra, cap goods, pharma, consumer, all of them. So you want to just check out those episodes. Ashish, one more way of asking this question, the same one that I asked to Shrey, is essentially that one question that all of us in the market start our day with, kya lagta hai? In the sense that how for someone who's interested in holding on to equities for the long term, which I think all of us should be, what is this deal? How do you look at this stock selection thing? Is it something that should, you know, keep everyone awake at night, ki just, you know, choose karo and then that's it?
No, I think that ideally it's not supposed to keep you awake at night, because we are out here talking about investing. We are not talking about trading. So let's isolate that in the first place. The second important thing is that a lot of people really look at stock as a stock, but ultimately, like Shrey described, we are buying a business. And, you know, I have the opportunity of meeting a lot of investors, and a lot of our investors are actually high net worth or affluent people. And very often I ask them this question that, you know, in your business, if I tell you that how much time will it take you to enhance your profit margin by 5%? Without compromising the volume. Mm. So most people tell me 4 quarters, 8 quarters, 3 years. So I say that when you are investing in the stock market and you are buying businesses of other people, how much time do you think it takes them to manage certain parameters?
Mm.
And then that sets them thinking. So I say that, you know, look, so for your business, you're very clear that it takes you quarters and years to achieve targets. But when you invest in somebody else's business, you want to check every morning what has changed.
Yeah.
So every morning only the price changes. The underlying business is completely different.
Okay, now I've got my framework right. I've got my stocks right. Valuation nahi jam raha hai, boss. The whole thing about valuation, right? Because, I mean, I don't know how right or wrong this obsession is. I just want to get into this entire valuation thing because it's also related to the timing of buying. A lot of people are obsessed with getting the timing of the decision right. Okay. You've done a lot of interesting analysis out there. Let's just go into this. Valuations.
Are valuations relevant? Answer is 100% yes. I don't think so. Any investor will say that valuations don't matter. However, there is a nuance to it because valuation itself is a very wide topic. So I will just keep the comments limited to what matters for the show right now. Because if we are talking about long-term investing and if we are honest and we are walking the talk of actually doing long-term investing. The interesting part to note is valuations start losing relevance as the investment horizon expands. And there is enough data, there is enough analysis that is out there. We ourselves have done a wealth creation study, and studying this aspect in depth, and the outcomes are there, very detailed. But for the purpose of this podcast, what may be worth mentioning is that if you look at Nifty, in the last 5 years, we've given the same returns as we've given in the last 15 years, very broadly speaking. But in the last 5 years, 70% of those returns have come from re-rating, which is valuations expanding, not the earnings. It's not earning driven, it's valuation driven. However, if you look at the last 15 years of the same Nifty, only 30% of the returns has come from valuations.
Wow.
Whereas 70% of the returns have come. And now if you were to look at the same data over 30 years.
A longer time frame.
Only 10% of the returns would have fluctuated because of you getting your timing right. And the other part is what happens is invariably in the attempt of timing, it is actually your landing up trading also. Because what happens is when you're trying to time too fine, you will get it right half of the times. You will not get it right the remaining half of the time. So eventually it ends up becoming a zero-sum game more often than not. There will be some who will get more lucky. There will be some who will get more unlucky also. So what happens is even if you were to choose the top 150 stocks or top 10 stocks out of those 150 stocks with the benefit, complete benefit of hindsight, and you would have invested 15 years ago, even those stocks have gone through 40-50% drawdowns. And you would have timed it, but to time it every time, you got to be lucky or you got to be literally very close to God for him to come and whisper it in your ear.
Yeah.
But if you get out of it and you're not able to get in at the right time, you would have missed what lies ahead.
Okay. Folks, small note again, she just spoke about the wealth creation studies that Motilal Oswal does. They've done this for what? For more than 20 years, starting in 1996?
Yes. Yeah?
So you want to just go to the website and have a look at the wealth creation studies. Each and every one of them are available in the PDF format, available for download. We've also done two episodes with Srinath Mithandaya talking about the wealth creation studies. Ashish, do you get asked this often? Sir, aapne ye stock kyun liya? Iska to valuation itna bada. You know, why do you want to buy expensive stocks? So what's your perspective on this?
Well, we do get asked a lot. And last 2 years, all the more. Because irrespective of what strategy you follow, one of the challenges of the last 2 years has been that, 2017-18 people made a lot of return and 2018-19 it's practically nothing.
Yeah.
So now you are, in 2 years, you practically not made too much. And in hindsight, everything will look like, where was the value and, those kind of questions. But I think that when you speak about valuations, there's no simple answer. It's very, very nuanced, like Shreya has already mentioned. There are a lot of moving parts. Most important one being what is your holding period, and over that holding period, what kind of growth trajectory the company is going to, and when you enter, how much of that is baked in. So, sometimes you might realize that, okay, maybe a couple of years is baked in, and you will not be able to price it to perfection. And if your holding period is longer, then you will be able to. The second thing to keep in mind is that a lot of folklore of the stock markets, all the folklore is actually about saying that, if you had bought this stock in its IPO, then this is what would play out and stuff. Yeah. So all the folklore is all about long-term investing and buying and holding on to great companies. And then I really struggle to reconcile when somebody asks me, last year you bought that stock at this price. So then I tell them that, somewhere you need to reconcile what you forward on WhatsApp and email and Facebook versus what you actually practice. You need to reconcile it a little bit and need to give us more time to demonstrate what we are actually trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And not to stretch a lot, but I'll just give you one last example.
Sure, please.
A couple of years back, and this is not a recommendation, we don't have it in our portfolios. Shreya doesn't have it in the portfolio. A couple of years back, this very famous company got listed. The owner of DMart, that is Avenue Supermarts. Why I'm taking this example is because there is a very famous analyst who wrote a report on this company.
Okay.
It became so famous that in one of the pink papers, it got covered.
Achha.
And, being in the field, you know that on any given day, hundreds of reports are written by very brilliant analysts.
Yeah.
All of them don't come in the pink papers. This report came in the pink paper because this gentleman actually said that, yes, it looks expensive right now, but he made some projection of 2027 and said that in 10 years, it will make a lot of money.
His view.
We are not debating.
That's not it.
But why it came in the pink paper is because it was panned like nobody's business. It's like, when there is a bull market, you guys write anything. How can you write a report with 10-year earning projection? What do you mean? It is expensive. How can you write 10 years, it will make money? So that set me thinking that in 1995, somebody dared to write such a report on, you know, HDFC Bank or Infosys or whatever it is.
Pity jayega wo bhi.
He would have been panned the same way. But in 2005, we don't know. So that actually made me think that what is the biggest mistake of this report? What is so wrong with this report? And then I realized is that, you know, how dare you make a 10-year report and send it into a market where people can't think beyond next quarter or 1 year. I mean, the market works on 1 year forward. We all know it.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. So I think that's the problem. I think the market, my net learning is that the whole market works on 1 year forward as a thought process.
Mm.
And it has no space for anybody to come and even say that, you know, look, please pardon the valuation for a year. I'm looking at much beyond.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether I'll be able to time the entry perfectly or not.
Yeah.
So you need to give that much space to an investor. That's the point.
Exactly. I think valuations are what? Just, I mean, they're just two factors out there. The actual multiple that you're giving and the earnings growth. And no stock can, there can't be a divergence between the two forever. Shreya, you're saying something.
So also what happens is it's the same point, right? At the end of the day, if you know your subject and if you know yourself and if you've done enough depth, you've gone to the enough depths of the businesses and the nuances, you will tide a problem as well as a promoter will tide the problem.
Ah, because you're an owner of the business.
Because you are, you actually, when you invest in equity, when you invest in stocks, you become a co-owner of the business.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you have to have the same level of belief and the same level of confidence in your own self and your own ability to be doing it. Because, you know, valuation is such a subject that today, most of the valuable companies globally are loss-making. It's the venture capital and the private equity money that just keeps funding those losses.
Mm.
But they are the most valuable companies with the hope that they will make money 10 years, 5, 15 years, 20 years down the line.
Mm.
But so valuation is a concept which is genuinely beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. For someone, a PE of 60 will be cheap. And for someone, a PE of 5 will be cheap. A metal stock at the PE of 20 will look extremely expensive, but a FMCG stock at a multiple of 20 will look extremely cheap. So it is understanding yourself, what works for you, and what works for you is dependent upon how long you hold a stock. And in that journey, there will be times when the stock will be down 50%, 60%. But at that point of time, it's your conviction at that moment, at that hour, that will determine, are you going to benefit out of long-term power of compounding or is just going to be a talk, or are you going to be able to walk the talk?
Yeah, you're going to get to the power of compounding later on in the show. We are right now going to take a small break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Shudaditya.
And I'm Amit Doshi.
And we host Shunya One.
It's a really fun podcast where we talk to some of the best entrepreneurs in the country.
Yes, talking about everything from their startup challenges to what they're building and all the future of technology right here.
So catch us on the IVM podcast website, app, or wherever you listen to your podcast from.
And welcome back to the Equity Sahi podcast. My guest, Shailunkar and Ashish Somaya. In the first part, we spoke about a lot of stuff on investment framework, identifying stocks, valuation. I'm going to just take this a few more questions from our listeners before we wrap up the show. Shrey, how do I time and size my investment? The timing part, I think we probably covered in the valuation bit. But this entire thing of size, right? Because I've always struggled with this. Should my portfolio have 5 stocks, 10 stocks, 15 stocks, 30 stocks, 500 stocks? I don't know. You're a fund manager. You know how many stocks are there in your portfolio. So is there an ideal number, or how should I be looking at this?
Theory seems to suggest that up to a particular point of time, adding extra stock into your portfolio optimally diversifies the portfolio. But beyond that threshold, every addition has a far marginal or far lesser utility of diversification that you derive. Now, the problem is these theories can be scientifically derived in a developed market because there is time series to it. In India, still, time series is yet to come. Time series is 30 years, 40 years, and where you can run stochastic models to figure out scientifically what the right answer is. And likewise, there are investors globally and in India where they all are successful, even a person who's invested in just one stock to a person who would have invested in 100 stocks, and they still would be successful. So at the end of the day, if you were to just follow a basic thumb rule, it's a two-pointer thumb rule. One is bet the maximum where your maximum conviction is. And then let the residual decide how many number of stocks needs to fit that. Second is allocate according to your risk reward that you understand. It's very important to understand risk as well as the reward. And because at the end of the day, it's the ratio that will determine eventually are you a successful investor or not. So you determine and allocate more to those stocks that you think where your risk reward is. But never make the mistake of thinking that adding a 40th stock to the portfolio is making me diversify some risks away. Theoretically, it just doesn't happen like that. So many times it's just simple to keep it simple. Bet the maximum what you understand the most. So if you trust on Sehwag, your betting odds will be far different than when you are betting on, Bumrah.
Okay. Ashish, in your conversations, have you had people come up to you and, you know, asking this kind of question, ki mere paas, you know, 50, 30, 20, I've got so many stocks, what do I do? I mean, what is the thinking out there that people have when they buy stocks?
No, so I think the experience is very different when you're dealing with individuals or high net worth investors versus with professional managers like Shrey or any of the mutual funds guys. I think mutual funds or portfolio management guys, they have some notion of what they are comfortable with. But the interesting experiences are when I meet individual investors. And this is not funny, but I have even met somebody who had a DMAT statement running into pages and pages and pages.
Wow.
It went nearly 2,000 items.
Wow.
Yeah.
So listed companies kitne hai, sir?
Listed companies are obviously in, I think, what?
6,000. Yeah, 6,000, actively traded about 3,000 maybe. Yeah,
yeah, actively is 2,900 and some odd number. So how does one end up with, say, 500 or 1,000 entries? Right.
Wow.
It's obviously because, you know, over the years, every IPO maybe you have subscribed to and, you know, you never got conviction in the one or two, but, you know, you are just kind of spray and pray kind of thought process. And then, you know, so that actually takes away from return potential in a very, very big way. I think from individual investors' perspective, as long you should know what you're doing, as long as you know what you're doing, then it's fine.
Sure.
But yeah, I think professional managers, most of them have a notion of what works for them.
Okay. You know, when I look at long-term returns, they might be at a certain number. When, say, a distributor or an advisor comes to me with an Excel sheet, he's also plugging in some number there for my long-term returns. What should I be prepared with? Okay, because I need to know, there's theory, of course, okay, where you have a certain thing which says that I think it's a risk-free rate plus equity risk premium should be your long-term equity return, which is all fine. So what's your perspective on this at a practical level? For me, as someone who owns equities for the long term, what is a reasonable rate of return that I should probably bake in or expect for the longer term?
So, obviously, the theoretical answer is extremely complicated. But there is a simple way of looking at things. If you follow one simple rule, it's largely a rule of thumb, but it works pretty much. Statistical relevance is very high of this rule of thumb. One is stock returns will track EPS growth, which is earnings growth of the company. And earnings growth of the company will track the economic growth, more or less. So if you were to just look at the last 15 years, in the last 15 years, the Nifty 500, which are the top 500 corporates of India, which will be again majority of the profit pool lying there in India, that would have tracked the GDP growth. Over 15 years, the profit growth is to the tune of 14-15%. And that's the kind of returns the stocks have also given. And that's the kind of growth rate the GDP has also grown. The only difference is, and which is the more interesting and the nuanced part of it, is if you split this 15 years in the block of first 5 years and the last 10 years, yeah, you will see, you will understand another economic concept, which is the concept of earning multiplier. So what happens is economy in general has a bit of momentum aspect to it. By that, what I mean is that beyond a particular threshold of growth, the delta or the multiplier that earnings get because of the GDP growth is far higher. And below a particular threshold, it works to the opposite. That means your earning growth is sub-low, very, very low. So as I was speaking, over the last 15 years, although the overall returns of the GDP, which reflects in this company's earnings growth, is about 14-15%, and so does the stock returns of 14-15%. But when you cut this slice of first 5 years and the last 10 years, in the first 5 years, our GDP grew at 14% or 15%, but our earnings grew 30%, which is two times the GDP growth. However, in the last 10 years, the earnings, the GDP has again grown at 14%, but our earnings have grown at 6% or 7%. It's half of that. So now this is the interesting part, right? So when you look at a long-term time series, it looks so algorithmic. Mm. It just looks extremely simple and algorithmic. But when you live that 15 years in each year parcels, yeah. you got to endure this. But that's the good part. That there are times when you will go above the threshold. And that's what we believe. That over the next 10 years, you will start hitting that part where your economic growth will be 15%. Because this will be more real GDP and less of inflation. And that's why the multiplier that you will have on earnings could be actually more than 2 times to 3, 2.5 times.
Yeah.
So in the next 5 years, you can make... The GDP can again continue to grow like how it's grown in the last 15 years of at 15% or 14% on a nominal basis, which can result into earnings growth upwards of 20 to 25%, which means you will make 20 to 25% stock returns as well.
Right. Ashish, do you get asked this often? Because as you said, this last 1 year has been tough. I think the last few months have also been a little bit tough. So yeah. do people throw this thing at you? Sir, mera to FD mujhe itna 7-8% de raha hai, to main kyun equities mein invest karu? What's your point of view on this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, unfortunately for professionals like us, the challenge is that there is a lot of hindsight which comes into it. Because what happens is that in 2014, 15, 16, everything in mid-caps and multi-cap looked very, very good. So in 2017, everybody bought mid-cap and multi-cap. And in 2018, probably just the top Nifty stocks or the large cap looks good. So now everybody wants to buy just the Nifty or the large cap. So, you know, when you buy mid cap after a hindsight, you know what happens. Now everybody wants to buy the index or large cap after hindsight, and we can forecast probably what is going to happen out there. So I think most important thing that people need to keep in mind, you know, whatever you were discussing with Shrey about certain numbers. Now, let us say that, you know, instead of 14-15% of the past, for a moment, I don't look at any future forecast. And I just water down the previous numbers and I say, okay, not 15%, let's say 12%. Mm. Let us say that, you know, nominal GDP, EPS, all the calculations put together, let me say 12%. So what it means is that equity should double your money in 6 years going forward, theoretically, if I assume 12%. What people should keep in mind is that 12% is definitely better than fixed income. It's going to be definitely better than any deposit or anything. But the challenge is that when you say that money should double in 6 years, which 2 years will be fabulous, which 2 years will be disastrous, and which 2 years will be actually a blowout or average or whatever, that is very difficult to forecast. So what people should keep in mind ideally is that when you say that equity is for long term, like 5 years, 6 years, whatever it is, then don't have the urge to make judgments in the first 1 year or the first 2 years. The biggest challenge right now is that, you know, when the markets are booming and returns are great, when people sign up, they sign the check, everybody's a long-term investor. But 1 year down the line, the long-term is out of the window.
Yeah.
The other thing which I've realized is that, and my learning, which you should never do in the stock markets, people are always in a hurry to decide what is right and what is wrong.
Achha. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, let us say when you're investing, you are a long-term investor.
Yeah.
Everything looks good. But at the end of 1 year, if your return is less than FD or if your return is minus 10 or something, then you are in this very big urge to make a pronouncement right there that this is wrong. This fund is wrong. This manager is wrong. This stock is wrong. The market is wrong. The government is wrong. And my learning is that in the markets, there's no right or wrong. There is only context and there's only perspective. So the first rule for being an equity investor, if you really want to materialize whatever folklore you have heard about, the first rule is never to draw conclusions. And, you know, stick to what you came with in your mind, and only then you'll be able to actualize it. In a 5-year journey, if you're prone to making conclusions in the first 20% leg of the journey, then I don't think you are going to materialize anything, actually, if you ask me.
Okay, last question on the show is, I actually want to end this on a positive note, okay? Because I had, just a few days ago, I had tweeted that mere 2 saal ho gaye, there's an SIP that I have.
Mid-cap SIP.
That's what I said, ki, thankfully, my capital is the same. Whatever I mean, I won't get into what fund and all that. How bad is bad? Where are we right now? Okay. And, you know, as someone, you guys will agree and
you have a huge following on Twitter.
But
I hope that all your followers appreciate sarcasm and they can understand when you're being sarcastic. I can understand you are being sarcastic.
I need to put a sarcasm font nahi hai abhi tak, but I've started to slowly add a slash s to say ki, achha, this is a sarcastic tweet. But yeah, come on, this is obviously as guys who are at the mutual fund side, I'm an investor. It's simple. When times are bad, you're supposed to just either invest more or just stick to the process. Yeah. So
I'll tell you something even more. What I realize is that, at the drop of a hat, people say things like, be greedy when others are fearful and be fearful when others are greedy.
Buffet ne bola hai, sir.
Haan, toh, that's not meant only for forwarding to each other and putting, nice quotes in your offices, right? Yeah. That's meant to be practiced.
Yeah. I agree.
So, yeah.
So just, let's end on a very positive note. Where are we right now? I remember that we on the banking episode, you'd spoken about how if the PSU banks were to provision everything, they would, so just let's just put this into a big picture perspective and wrap this show up on a positive note. Well, how bad is it? What are we looking at?
So generally, big picture can get very big. So just to keep the big picture a little short is, are things bad? Answer is yes. Have things got extended and overextended over the last 10 years? Answer is yes. But the fact is, over the last 10 years, honestly, we've seen a lot as a country. A lot. Mm. Absolutely a lot. And more so in the global context, even more so. And which has just gone to make us absolutely even more solid. My view, personal views. But, one measure, if you want to just look at, is at the end of the day, when you look at the health, we talk about growth rates and all that is fine. But at the end of the day, it's the, any company. If you're a businessman today, all that matters to you is what is my profit margin. Profit margin is one of the, amongst many, but one of the more simpler ways of concluding how bad is bad. And if you look at the profit margin of GDP, which is calculated by profits to GDP, the corporate profits to GDP, we are today at 2.8% of GDP is our profit margin at a country level. This number was last achieved in 2003. Mm. So wow. We are almost 15 years behind now.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now the good part. So this was the bad part. Now the good part is that in 2008, we went to as high as 5.5%.
Almost twice that.
Yeah. Now the point is, can we get there? Our view is a resounding yes. In fact, if all goes well, over the next 10 to 15 years, we may even set a new higher benchmark than 5.5%.
Possible.
And that is what was the concept of earning multiplier, which I alluded to before, that the real GDP growth goes above a particular threshold. Your velocity on earnings is a multiplier. And there will be a phase over the next 10 years, there will be a 2-3 year phase when you will see actually earnings grow at 30%, 35%, 40%. And that's what creates the maximum wealth. Now, the problem is we are busy answering when. But the problem is, actually the easier way to deal with a problem like that is don't ask when. Just believe it will happen over the next 5 to 7 years and stay invested through the course, because when it will come like a tsunami and it will be the most roaring bull run that we would have seen.
That's a really positive note. Ashish, equity sahi hai, mutual fund sahi hai. All of this has been told to us. I think now we are at what, 2.5 crore SIPs or about 3,000 rupees each per month. So the tap is about 8,000 crore per month.
Yes, yes, yes.
So there are still a lot of believers.
Yes.
On the ground, I've heard people are saying thoda sa fatigue aa gaya hai, log soch rahe hai ki continue kare, nahi kare. What you just said a while ago was so on the point, that when you have a 5-year return of 15%, it doesn't mean every year you'll have 15%.
Of course, yeah.
Some days it'll be up, some days it'll be down. How should investors ideally treat this period that we are going through to get set for the period that Shrey is talking about?
Yeah, so in fact, numbers can be very interesting the way you cut it. You just look at it this way, that, some of the funds that we manage, the 5-year CAGR is double digit. And the last 2-year CAGR will be practically next to nothing, low single digit. So what does it mean? It means that for a guy who actually remained invested for 5 years, at the end of 5 years, he still has, a respectable number. But that 5-year number is delivered after delivering nothing in the last 2 years. So a guy who started 2 years back, he's unhappy, but he also should keep in mind that how his 5-year journey might actually. So there are times when returns are front-ended and there are times when returns are back-ended. And it's only important that, like I said before, that, you know, you stick to plans. Also keep in mind that, you know, in any 5-year time frame or 6-year time frame, if you expect that money should be doubled and you realize that, okay, if you're a smart cookie, you realize that the first 2 years nothing has happened, it means your return is going to be back-ended. That actually, it means you should be doubling your bets.
Yeah.
Or you should be at least increasing your commitment. So I think there are ways to think about these things. And, you know, it's not for no reason that we say that when the going gets tough, the tough get going, because that's when the intelligent people make more money.
Great. So I hope that all the listeners on the show are intelligent enough, I'm sure they are, to make more money in the long term using this episode as a nice framework to be prepared, because that's how equity returns are. Just stay in for the long term. That's been the focus of our episode so far on the Equity Sahi podcast. This is a wrap on the Investor's Playbook. My guest today, Shrelunkar, Senior VP at Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company, and the bonus guest, Ashish Somaya, CEO at Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company. Thank you so much, Ashish. Thank you so much, Shrey, for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Advertising is dead. Yep, you heard me right. Advertising is dead. We're all in the content business now. Let's not call it news, TV, radio, etc., etc. It's all content, and we're in the middle of this weirdly exciting phase where all the borders and lines that have been drawn over decades has been swept away by this lovely thing called the internet. We're a show where we don't dwell on just the stuff that is now, but rather the wider stuff about advertising, media, content, and the whole goddamn circus surrounding it. Tune in every Tuesday for our weekly unboxing of the mystery box we used to call advertising. I'm Varun Dugirala, co-founder and content chief at The Glitch, and this is my new podcast, Advertising is Dead.
Hi, I'm Satyajit.
Hi, I'm Racheta.
We are from the Open Library Project and we host a podcast called Paperback.
Paperback is a podcast where we engage with stalwarts and experts from various industries, suggesting non-fiction titles that contributed to their journey in a big way.
We've had guests like Anjali Raina, Dr. Marcus Rani, Dr. Swati Lodha, Ambi Parmeswaran, Apurva Damani, and many more on our show Paperback. Find new episodes every Wednesday on IVM Podcast app, website, or wherever you listen to podcasts.